Welcome to The Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. We speak with a variety of creatives from all sorts of backgrounds and industries and roles about mental health, money, relationships, their creative process itself, and everything in between. I'm your host, Shannon Byrne, and I'm just trying to figure it out like the rest of us. Hannah Spencer does all of our branding and design and a lot of our marketing, and Lonnie Webb runs our social media. This episode is a special one, a bit of a deviant from our current season all about creatives in the Bay Area and how they make it work. This one, rather, is with Rob Fitzpatrick, one of the co-founders and the main talent buyer and organizer of Levitation. This is a special episode because the process has press passes to Levitation, and we'll be interviewing folks during the festival down in Austin, November 7th through 10th. And we wanted to introduce you to the festival if you're not familiar and let you know about it so you can join us there and we can hang out. Also, just to give you kind of like lay the groundwork of what's to come early next year. So Rob, as I mentioned, is one of the co-founders and the main talent buyer for Levitation. Originally named Austin Psych Fest, Levitation took place in a more traditional music festival format, but today it is a walkable, intimate, and community-focused event that showcases Austin's world-renowned music venues, with acts from all over the place coming to play. The 2019 event takes place in Austin's Red River and Eastside districts, as I mentioned, on November 7th through 10th. The lineup is huge. Definitely check out levitation-austin.com. The acts includes Angel Olsen, John Cale, which is huge, David J, also amazing, Devendra Bonhart, Kikagayo Moyo, Black Angels, White Fence, Mercury Rev, and so many more. Super stoked about this lineup. In addition to the flagship event in Austin, they also curate Levitation events in France, Chicago, and Vancouver, as well as events in Austin throughout the year and showcases at Mexico City's Normal, the Netherlands La Guess Who, and of course South by Southwest. They also founded the Reverberation Appreciation Society record label, which has released records by bands like Nightbeats, Holy Wave, Ringo Death Star, and many more. Rob's background is in design, but today he focuses pretty much solely on Levitation. In our conversation, we talked about the hurdles they face over the 11 years they've organized an independent festival and how they've overcome them, what's in store for the future for Levitation, what to expect this year, why they moved to a City Fest format a few years ago, and how that's worked since, and how the financials of the event work, why they do showcases, their approach to curating, which is always a super fascinating thing to hear, the role of 1960s psychedelic music in art today, and a bunch of other stuff. I hope you enjoy this episode. We'll be back to our regular scheduled programming on Tuesday with our Bay Area season. Before I forget, one other thing I want to mention about this episode is that you'll hear us at the very beginning talk about how I went to the festival the year that it was canceled. I did not intend to talk about that at all, let alone open up with it, but it just, the conversation happened that way, and I'm a believer in sharing how these conversations unfold and naturally with you. Also, it was just like a really positive conversation, and it led into Rob explaining like how they overcame that challenge and how like these things happen, and it's a very real part of the process because we cannot control things like the weather. So there's that. You can find links and show notes at theprocess.co. Again, Levitation's website is levitation-austin.com. A reminder that we have a Patreon for you to help us keep this thing going, because it does cost money, it is a bit expensive, and it would just help us out a lot. Thank you again for being here and for listening and for considering supporting us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/theprocessco. Yeah, hope you dig it. Let us know what you think, and see you on Tuesday. Cheers, y'all.
I am stoked about Levitation and getting to go again.
Awesome. Did you come last year?
No, I was actually there the year that it was canceled.
Okay. And did you come another year?
No, that was the only time I was able to.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this will be a better experience by far than having the rug pulled out from under everybody.
Totally.
Yeah.
I empathized big time I mean, I had a fine time and was trying to be like hanging out in Austin with my friends. But for you guys, I definitely empathized with that experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were just a bum for everybody who, you know, there's just no way to shoehorn 10,000 plus people who were planning on going into the venues that were able to kind of scramble and fill the shows. It's great to hear that you still, you know, had a good time and were able to kind of salvage the weekend and still enjoy it.
Yeah, I definitely am curious, is that why you moved to the kind of like City Fest format?
City Fest format is something that we had seen happen multiple times. Austin has unique infrastructure in the sense that we have all these great venues right downtown that are within a stone's throw from each other, where you have staff and stage and, you know, venues who support live music culture year round. Even when we were out at the ranch, we had kind of kicked around the idea of doing something, you know, kind of like a satellite event in that format. There was a festival called Chaos and Tejas that our friend Timmy did for a few years. And yeah, we just kind of saw that as something that was a little more sane in a lot of ways, especially with the size of our team, to be doing something on the as ambitious as we were, you know, kind of building a city and hiring all these people to help us with that was, you know, it was pretty intense. So we were like, oh, it'd be cool. Like, if we ever did anything else, let's do it this way, this kind of simpler way. And all that venue infrastructure is there because of South by Southwest, which, you know, to a large degree follows that venue-based format. So we saw the potential. And then the reason for the move away from a traditional festival in the field format to what we're doing now was not only the necessity of it, because we lost quite a bit of money. You know, we're independent group, right, of just like four friends who started this crazy thing. None of us have any real money. You know, we're just basically two musicians. Myself, I have, you know, a design and like web development background, and then our fourth partner is a filmmaker. So yeah, we all didn't have any money to take a loss like that, and we never kind of found investors to back us and kind of be able to build a dream and be able to take those risks without some pretty big consequences. So after 2016, you know, our losses were like over 300K. And
wow.
Which isn't insane for a festival to bounce back from, you know, when you have backing. It's like, okay, well, that sucks. And, you know, especially at the scale we're at, other smaller festivals with less success have lost more money than that and then continue the next year. But those are typically going to be put together by year-round promoters or these festivals that you see pop up, you know, maybe on a scale that are, you know, put up by like AEG and Live Nation and stuff. A lot of times those festivals lose millions of dollars and they're back the next year because they kind of are able to have a more of a long game plan.
So
but for us,
ticket fees supporting them.
Yeah, well, you know, they also just have the well to draw from. So it's like, you know, because there's so many reasons why a festival can go badly. There's an element of luck with booking. There's weather. There's could just be poorly marketed. There's so many things that can happen. For us, yeah, we were able to bounce back from a loss like that. Our endeavor has always had to be totally self-sustaining. And the other side of it was that doing the festival in that format, being subject to the weather and everything, it was so insanely stressful for us. We all got into this to have fun and promote the music we love and support the music and art we love. So it was like, after going through that, let's just never do that again. I mean, it's pretty like life-altering situation to go through that. And so after all that stress, it's like, let's do that other idea that we were talking about, the one that seems less crazy. So we moved downtown. The other really great part about it is that going back to those venues that support live music year-round, we were inadvertently competing with all those venues and promoters and basically the music community at large in Austin by throwing a giant festival, you know, outside city limits, right? This way, we're able to work with everybody directly and build something together. We always did like after shows and there's so much support. Everybody loved what we were doing, but this fits directly into the ecosystem that is already there. There's a lot less moving parts. And at the end of the day, we just want to present great music and not have to worry about building a city and all the insanity that comes with that. You know, there is an element of like the building that's exciting, but I think the core of the experience and what we want to provide is it's the music and the art, and the setting is important, but the music and the art is transformative. It makes the setting what Levitation is. You know, the ranch wasn't so special on its own. It was everybody coming together and the art, the bands, you know, and that's what Levitation still is. So,
right. Having never been to the ranch, when you say build a city, was it, I don't want to like compare it to another festival, but was it similar to what Desert Days does? Was it,
in some ways, you know, Desert Days is at a state park now, so there is some existing infrastructure that they can tie into, you know, like some electrical, and they even have bathrooms and stuff there, whereas the ranch was really pretty raw. So we're bringing everything in, water, power, stages. It's an incredible expense. I mean, I think we were spending over 50% of our budget, which is your ticket, on the infrastructure, just to get everything there, you know, security, water, stages, all that stuff, versus in this format, what you're looking at when you buy your ticket, that's what the bands cost, basically. In some ways, you know, it creates a more democratic experience in a lot of ways, because instead of, again, the traditional festival format, you can just choose whatever show you want to go to. And we were pretty surprised to see there is, you know, still a pretty good percentage of people who go all weekend, but those people just will go to one or two shows. That was really interesting to us, because whereas before you buy like $100 weekend pass to see, you know, some people were doing that for, a $100 like day pass just to see one band, really, because maybe that's the one band that got them to go, versus now you can buy a ticket anywhere from, you know, I think our lowest ticket is $15 up to around $50 for a general admission ticket. And then you get to see that band, whether it's the Flaming Lips or, I don't know, the Coat Hangers or something like that. Like, you know, these artists have fans that love that band, and they just want to see that band, and this format opens that up a bit. It's very different. You know, we're basically getting to utilize and showcase what Austin has that's really unique. I mean, we've looked into trying to replicate a similar format in other cities, and there really aren't many places that have the same possibilities in terms of, you know, still having a walkable experience and being able to, you know, kind of cruise around to multiple venues really easily. Most cities it requires a taxi or kind of a longer haul, you know, to get from venue to venue.
Totally. I think also, like, to further your point, having the separate shows also allows people who, like, have families to definitely see the bands that they want to see and, like, not have to leave their kids for a weekend or find childcare.
Yeah, I have, my daughter is 23 months old, so she's just about to be two. So, yeah, I definitely feel that.
Yeah. Has that, if you don't mind me asking, has that, like, impacted revenues much, the new format?
Overall, gross revenue is down, but last year, net revenue was actually up. And if you look at it as a percentage and consider the risk and everything, it's kind of night and day. It's a much better business model in terms of what you're risking and what you can potentially net. And our approach really is that the shows basically just break even. You know, we budget these shows around, I wouldn't call it a loss leader, but, you know, we really make our money through partnerships with brands and kind of just finding other ways to make money other than on the ticket, because the ticket, people are so sensitive to the price with tickets, and it's already hard enough to book the bands that we want to get to Levitation in this format, because now you're dealing with hard tickets. Your maximum budget is ticket price is time sellable capacity less your costs, what you're paying the venue to, you know, rent their space, hire their staff, all that. But look, our headliner budgets are smaller for sure than when we were. And it makes sense, because now you're looking to basically sell a ticket to fill our largest space is Stubbs, which is just 2,200 capacity versus, you know, 10,000 people. So if the idea is that any given night in a traditional festival, the majority of your audience is going to be there to see that headliner, well, then you need a headliner that's going to bring 10,000 people out, or whoever your midliners are, it's going to add up to that, versus this situation, you know, there's less pressure there. And that also opens up some more creative opportunities, because you don't have to book whatever the mega headliner is that fits within your programming, because for us, that's going to be a really small number of bands. You know, some of these artists are very singular in the sense that you can't get some of like our wish list bands when we were shooting for bigger stuff. Like, you know, if you can't get Portishead, then like, who's the other? Okay, well then maybe you're trying to get Radiohead, or if you're trying to bring up 10,000 people or more with the style of music we want to present, there's like 20 bands who can do that, you know, and that might be a little low, but versus, you know, if you're trying to fill out Stubbs or just, you know, your options open way, way up. So that's cool. And it also creates a little less competition, especially, you know, being an independent. We don't have the buying power and leverage that Live Nation does to get those huge artists. A lot of times when we have big artists play, it's because they really want to play and they're interested in the festival, because we don't have the money to entice people just with the money, you know.
So they are working with you a bit. They might like lower their festival guarantee. Play Levitation.
I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, it's always. I mean, look, the agents, you know, agents are doing their job, and managers are doing their job, which is to get the artists as much money as possible. So, I mean, you're always going to be up against that as a talent buyer, but it is trickier when you're independent and you're not booking multiple events throughout the year, multiple giant festivals where you can kind of string together those deals. Yeah, a lot of folks work with us and have shown us a lot of love, but there's also a lot of challenges involved, because they've got to look at their bottom line. It's like, okay, we're going to do this thing. We're going to do Levitation. Austin, or are we going to do this other thing that makes more money? And I don't expect anybody to choose us over something that pays better, because everybody they're trying to sustain their art and their touring party and their families. You know, it's like, there's a lot that goes into it. But yeah, we've been very lucky through basically just the goodwill that the festival has, which I think stems largely from the folks who founded it. You know, my partners, the Black Angels, when we started this in 2008, we're really building on their reputation, the love that people have for their music. So that has made a lot of that easier. It'd be really tricky to try to do something like this, just kind of like from the ground up, without that foundation of those connections.
That's great. Y'all have been able to sustain it, even with the challenges and venues setbacks, weather setbacks. And also, for what it's worth, like, one of the things that's always attracted me to Levitation is the fact that the lineup is different, because they've become very homogenous among the, even like mid-level festivals have become pretty same. So,
yeah,
the limitations that spark the creativity, because you have no other choice, right? But also, you like, ends up
to a certain degree, yeah. And, you know, we have our wish list, and it's always growing, and there's always so many great new bands up and coming, and that's been one of the most exciting things about my role. You know, when we started it, Christian from the Black Angels was doing the booking, and as the band to kind of go back in time a bit, the band was doing really well and kind of making some waves in this scene and in this developing scene of kind of a resurgence of psychedelic rock. And they had the idea to put this festival together, and I was on board to help. And my role developed from just kind of a support role into something bigger. You know, by 2011, guys had gotten really busy with the band, and I started doing all the booking from 2011 until now. So, you know, all those lineups have come together through our kind of collective wish list that we have, and then working through that and making decisions and, you know, bringing new artists to the table. I'm like, hey, like, you know, we got to get these guys. And, you know, so it's been a collaborative effort the whole way through. I think that the people that make up the festival and kind of our relationship is the end result is the lineups, you know? And so it's the bands we love and want to present, and we always want it to be different from all the other events. Yeah, because if not, kind of like, what's the point? People can see there's a regional festival in every place, you know? And it's kind of like, and not to knock that, because there's a place for that, and it's important to develop all kinds of different artists, but we want to present a specific thing. So,
for those who might be unfamiliar with Levitation, how would you describe the thing that you're going for?
Well, kind of the ethos of the festival and our programming stems from psychedelic rock and then kind of branches out from there. So if you think about the 60s and kind of the dawn of psychedelic rock, it was really experimental and groundbreaking. Now, whenever you hear somebody, you know, making music that sounds like it's from 1968, it's almost kind of like traditional in a sense, you know, because they're picking up the song structures and the sounds and tones and everything, and it's can almost be like mimicking it or something. But back then, I mean, this was mind-blowingly creative stuff that had never been heard before. You know, there's that element. We want to present stuff that we think is really interesting and vital and creative. But at the same time, we do really have a soft spot for those classic 60s sounds. And then there's a reason why all that gear is so sought after. There's just something really timeless and special about it. So this kind of classic psychedelic rock sounds are a big part of our programming. Beyond that, that music spawned all these other amazing kind of threads of music, whether it's some of the heavier rock stuff that you'll see us presenting. Like, think about like the thread that Black Sabbath started and go down that route, or someone like Silver Apples, who is responsible for, in a lot of ways, all the electronic music that we hear now. So there's that whole side of things. Our lineups, it's a lot of guitar music, but that isn't really where our interests start and end. We like to program a lot of stuff that might be considered experimental, or it's all a little out there. It's all very creative, but generally we, you know, I'm mentioning a lot of genres and stuff, but it's really just music that we're into to a certain degree, or that we think our audience is going to be into, or, you know, we ask people all the time, who do you want to see next year? And so that's another kind of guide outside of our own interests. We're looking into what people are listening to and who they want to see at the festival.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's the core of what we do is it's mind-expanding psychedelic sounds in the context of rock and roll. So everything from the 13th Floor Elevators, who we took our name Levitation from one of their songs, you know, making those sounds in 1965, all the way to newer artists doing stuff that's pretty, could be considered pretty out there. Like, you know, if you, like, check out, like, you know, Flying Lotus's new record and what he's doing with his music. Pretty wide scope, I guess, is what I'm getting at. It's not a very good sound bite, but
it's okay. This show's not really about sound bites.
Sweet.
Do you, when it comes to the curation process, it sounds like you just make a giant list of bands you all are into, and that, you know, that Levitation community members, attendees are into, and you just kind of go from there, start to reach out to people?
Yeah, and there is also an element of, well, who's active and who's touring and who wants to play Levitation. We want to make sure that if one of the artists that we are excited about and we think our audience is going to be excited that has a new album coming out, we want to make sure that we book them. But there's also an element of yeah, just inviting whoever we want. Although I will say that was a little more possible with the older format, just because we were a little freer with like our offers and stuff back then, and it didn't always work, you know?
Yeah.
So as the festival's gone on, we're just like, all right, well, we need to make sure that this band is going to sell tickets for sure. It's gotten a lot more analytical, which is good, because again, what we're trying to do is create a sustainable platform for this stuff that can, you know, still be around in 20 years.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, which, speaking of a couple of questions, one is like, how much of the festival accounts for like your career in general, but also like, what is the plan for sustaining as a fest, if there is one, or if you're just kind of learning as you go?
Sure. So yeah, I mean, for me personally, I'm 100% on Levitation. Sometimes I'll take on outside projects kind of during the slower times, but you have to make a decision with something like this. It's like, you're either going to go 100% and take it where it can go, or it's kind of just not going to get there. You know, kind of have to be all in on something like this. And that's what I do. It's 100% of what I do.
Oh, rad.
Yeah. For better or worse sometimes, but mostly for the better.
Totally. So, I mean, I think too, like, going to the second half of that question about sustaining, like, of course you want it. You are looking to Levitation in 20 years from now, because it's like you're fully invested, right? It's not like a side project that may or may not continue to work at your career.
Yeah, and I mean that, you know, I hope that commitment shows and what we put out.
Absolutely.
But yeah, long term, we're looking to develop more of a team around what we're doing and find more pathways to make it all work, bring in other people who are doing great stuff in music, you know, basically just kind of develop the community that's already grown around Levitation. There's so many people who have given their time and talents and contributions to Levitation outside of the founders and owner group. It's like from the people who, you know, from our photographers to all the visual artists, poster artists, all the stage staff, production people, the folks who put together and curate all these elements of what we do. It's theirs just as much as it's mine, you know. So our goal is to just kind of keep this going for everybody, because, you know, and have it be something that everybody benefits from, because, you know, Levitation has launched a lot of careers and it's given people a platform to thrive. That's our goal with it. And that's, you know, that's what the future holds. That's what we're up to.
Yeah. And how big is the team now?
Well, it kind of expands and contracts depending on what time of the year it is.
Right.
Yeah, like right now, full-time. Yeah, full-time, it's myself and Johnny Sarkis. Johnny used to head up our bars and sponsorship in the old format. In 2016, when we were trying to figure out a way to move Levitation forward, Johnny and I came up with a plan to basically bring him in as a business director and an owner in order to make it work. Yeah, we are definitely a duo in terms of keeping everything rolling, you know, as far as the core group. But, you know, everybody who started is still involved. You know, you've got Christian Alex with the Black Angels, James Oswald, who does our video. And actually, he and his wife head up our photo and video team every year, and they're responsible for managing and curating all that content. You know, we have a great person doing social media right now. When it's not festival time, I usually do that. We have, you know, Alex Geyser is heading that up right now for us. She's been a part of the Austin scene for a long time. And then I have a part-time assistant that works with me, my friend Todd. He does a lot of stuff on the merch side at the festival, but, you know, leading up to the fest, he helps me just kind of wrangle all the admin stuff that Johnny isn't doing, just kind of helping keep me sane through the process. Because even though it's less time intensive in some aspects, it's than the traditional festival format as far as production with all the different presenters, and we actually book more bands than we used to in the old setup. So it's definitely something, you know, I need help with. There's a lot of folks, and you know, we hire out a lot of folks, you know, who are professionals in their own field, you know, like somebody like Bailey, she's part of our team too, you know, and she does stuff year round.
And is Levitation France all the same team working on it?
No, you know, Levitation France is different.
Okay.
So that kicks off tomorrow. We have a really amazing team there that's made up of Radical Production, who is Christoph Davy. He's a very renowned promoter in France. He also represents the Black Angels, and that's kind of how the relationship developed. And he is from the city of Angers, and they have a venue there called Le Chabadat, and they have a great, you know, year-round team too. So in France, our partners there are the Chabadat and that whole team, and then Radical. So you basically have the promoter and the production team. And then primarily I'm their main point of contact to kind of get things queued up. So I do a lot of the general, like, creative direction for Levitation. But yeah, it can be a pretty hands-off process, you know, because we just kind of let them roll with what they know how to do so well versus Austin. We want to develop a team like that in Austin, you know, because we do have, you know, there's just limitations that you have versus an existing, like, office of people. If you have an office, people are doing shows year-round, they're going to have a depth of experience and resources that is hard to match, kind of building it up yourself. So, yeah, they work very differently currently.
And you mentioned that you couldn't get backers or funding. Did you try to, or is that an intentional move?
You know, honestly, it's been a little bit of both, you know, in the sense that we're just looking for the right partner. We haven't been turned down by anybody. We're just trying the right formula for Austin and kind of for the main organization. Because it's like, you know, you put so much love into something, you want it to be in good hands. That's something we're looking into, because it's difficult to achieve everything that we want to achieve with our limited resources and bandwidth.
Right. I guess the question I'm kind of circling around for some reason is how does a festival sustain financially while maintaining the authenticity that a festival like Levitation has? Like, I know Partners Place has a huge role in keeping the festival going. Like, any ideas of what that looks like?
For us, it's been just kind of grinding it out and just getting through some tough times without, if things go badly, then that's where your sweat equity comes in to a certain degree, you know, or it has in the past versus being able to pull in some money from somewhere, which isn't always a good idea. The way that we approach the festival is basically a startup, you know, so if you look at what a startup has to go through, it's similar in a lot of ways. And so at the end of the day, everything we do has to make a little money or it doesn't work, you know, so you really have to have some business sense that's going with the curation and every decision that you make, or it's going to crumble, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there has to be a balance between the business side and the creative side, or the creative side won't be around. The business side has to work. The business side doesn't have to detract from the creative side. You know, you just have to do it the right way. I guess basically get creative with it. Find all those sources of revenue and do it in a way that you feel good about and that doesn't diminish what you're doing creatively, you know?
I'd imagine that the fact that you have been creative and like have made it through some pretty gnarly challenges would be very attractive to the right partner at some point, or investors. The fact that you'll have been able to keep going and pivot and, you know, still have a community supporting you and showing up, I'd imagine says a lot to a potential investor.
Yeah, for sure. And at the end of the day, we're not looking for money. We're looking for a pathway to continue what we're doing in a more complete way than just, you know, because if we were just looking for a check, it wouldn't be hard to find. We're looking for a way to build a sustainable business model that's going to last, you know, and it's been a little tricky to navigate that, but we're making some good headway there. It's exciting.
That's great. Yeah, very exciting. Are you still doing a lot of the design for the fest?
I try to not get too involved in that because, I mean, I still do some, like I did our kind of like our main posters this year, but I really prefer to work with other people to do the design work and just kind of guide it and art direct it a little bit versus me trying to put all that love into something, because I just don't have the time to do something I'm going to like really be happy with.
Yeah.
in a kind of a funny way. I still do it sometimes, like, you know, I'll get excited about an idea that I have. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. With everything else that's on my plate, it's hard to put the time in. Beyond that, there's visual artists who are miles beyond me in their creativity and technical skills. So, and a lot of them want to work with Levitation. So I reach out to those folks and line something up with them. Like in the next few weeks, you start to see our poster show start to roll out. And that's always exciting for me. You know, like my background is design and to screen print gig posters for bands, you know, design them and that whole process. So it still keeps me involved in that without putting myself in a situation where all of a sudden I'm spending all this time like trying to design an amazing poster when I should probably be answering that email, that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So,
fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
It's been an element of, you know, just balancing that. And again, like there's so many amazing visual artists out there to work with. So I just kind of head up reaching out to them and lining stuff up.
That makes sense. And also demonstrates another part of your job as a festival runner that people might not think about that goes into it. You know what I mean? The branding aspect.
For us, the visual part and the music are equally as important. We want the same level of quality that's on the stage, you know, to be on the posters or through the visual artists that we hire to, you know, do our projections and our installations and all that good stuff.
Cool.
It's a lot of organization.
Yeah.
Phone calls and spreadsheets and emails. And, you know, the process can be kind of daunting sometimes, but it's also very fun and rewarding when it's all coming together.
Yeah. This might be a boring question, but are there any specific go-to tools? You said spreadsheets and emails, but are you also using like management tools?
We use Basecamp a little bit. I have a lot of Google Docs and spreadsheets, and because of my familiarity with, you know, just historically, that's what we've used. I'm just used to these formats, like, you know, my booking doc and just kind of the workflow. So generally I use that. There are some really great project management tools that are out there and some that have been designed specifically for music festivals. And we've looked at them. For now, it's just Google Docs, spreadsheets, and Basecamp.
Same
and the occasional, you know, 3 a.m. text message or whatever it takes, really, you know.
Totally. Is it pretty much a 24/7 gig, sort of, at least in terms of availability?
You could do that to yourself, but I don't recommend it, you know. I've definitely done that before, but got to set limits. I try to just keep normal work hours. I'm in the office from 9 to 5 or the equivalent, whether it's early or later, and I just try to keep it at that because my work suffers if I'm not happy. You know, I need to have that downtime and time with my family to be able to enjoy the work. Finding a balance has been part of all this too.
But you're in Austin, right?
I'm not actually. My wife and I moved to Puerto Rico in 2011.
Okay.
So yeah, I do all this remotely to a certain degree. I mean, it's all mostly built around one weekend anyways, so we're not doing anything on site where the festival is for the majority of the time. Yeah, her family's from here and we're just ready for a change, so we made the jump here. I get lots of Austin time. It's nice in a way to have the separation. There's definitely a lot of things that I miss out on, you know, not being in Austin, but I don't know, living here is much more my speed. There's a lot of things here, like I went surfing this morning and it's a big part of my life, so and that's kind of one of those key things that keeps me balanced and able to pull off everything that it takes to do levitation, is to have that outlet. And I didn't have an outlet like that in Austin that I could, that I was passionate about. So
yeah, I was gonna ask you if you had any tips for balance. That sounds like a big one. Are there any others?
Yeah, just setting limits on, you know, how much time you're gonna work on something. Yeah, it's just a lot of practices that would come into play for anybody running their own business. It can take up 100% of your life if you let it. So you have to set those boundaries. And if a show or a booking isn't coming together, you know, I won't chase it down and to the point that it's just absolutely exhausting. It's like you just have to say, okay, well, it's not working out. Let's move on. It's all very deadline oriented, of course, because there's a date when the event is happening. So no matter what it is, it's like, all right, well, I haven't heard back from this artist. It's time to move on, you know, whether it's a visual artist or whatever. It's just, you know, all right, well, there's other people out there. There's other bands. It's all tied to a timeline. And so you don't want to spend too much time on any given task if it's not going to really add to the big picture the way it needs to, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Time limits help. Where in Puerto Rico are you?
I live on the west side. I live in a little town called Espinar. It's in between Aguada and Aguadilla, close to Rincon, Puerto Rico. So we are on the northwest coast.
One of my best friends and sister-in-law, her family is from, I think, like the general area, definitely close to Rincon. And both my roommates are from San Juan, which is why I asked, because I heard that like there's a pretty strong psychedelic music community and creative community in general in San Juan.
Yeah,
I'm curious if you experienced that.
There's some great venues. You know, you have venues like La Repuesta or Club 77 bringing in international artists. And there's also some great bands from Puerto Rico, you know, particularly in San Juan. I live about 2.5 hours away from San Juan, so I don't really get over there that much. But every once in a while, they'll book somebody from the States that I haven't seen in a while, or we'll just get, you know, an urge to go see a show. And those are both great spots that are cultivating a scene in Puerto Rico. Yeah, I mean, the musical history here is insane, you know, and when you think about the kind of like the credentials that Puerto Rico has, you know, basically two of the biggest music movements of the past 50 years came from Puerto Rico, you know, salsa and now reggaeton. So you know, there's a lot of really amazing musicians in Puerto Rico and a lot of, you know, music families. I don't know enough about the bands in the psych scene and stuff, but I'm sure, I bet some of them, you know, somebody in their family was one of these amazing salseros, you know, to maybe introduce them to music, and then they got into some psych music and punk stuff, who knows. But yeah, it's a cool place for sure, and it's so different from Austin in many ways, so it's nice to kind of jump back and forth.
Totally. My day job is for a company that's like a sample library and plug-in rental thing, and it is
okay.
Wild how popular our reggaeton samples are, like bonkers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool to see, you know, Latin music is starting to get some real traction and respect in kind of the Western world. So you have artists I mean, they're already selling all the records. They already had all the streams, right? But now they're finally getting booked on the mega fests. So that's cool. Kind of a world apart from you know, what we're doing with Levitation to some degree. But there's a band from Puerto Rico, Fantasmes, who we had play twice. A lot of folks are probably familiar with WS666. Great, like, garage punk band from PR. Yeah, when I had the opportunity to, I'm like, oh shit, this band's from Puerto Rico. They're great. I'm gonna, you know, spread a little love and put them on Levitation.
Yeah.
W actually just kind of came back and started, you know, they're active again, but it didn't quite line up to have them play Levitation this year.
They're friends with my roommate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They recently played a, like, very random show in New York that I was not in town for, but I heard was fun.
Yeah, so that's my Puerto Rico tangent.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is there anything about this year's festival, whether lineup related or not, that you're especially excited about?
One element that we have introduced with, I mean, to answer quickly, like, yes, there's, you know, there's so many bands I'm excited about, but one thing to point out, or just that's I think it's interesting in the context of your other questions, is one thing that we're developing with a new format is bringing in curators and presenters, because the format enables that, you know, to have like a record label come in and present shows. So we have a lot of great labels and groups coming in and presenting stuff. Like Sergeant House is doing a really great show. Third Man Records has a great show. So, you know, in year two, in developing this idea, it's been cool to see that come to fruition, you know,
yeah.
Just the different ideas that other co-presenters will bring. And, you know, basically we had more voices in the curation process that way, introducing different kind of facets of what we're doing, you know, whether it's we got like the old classic Detroit rock and roll magazine Cream presenting a show, or, you know, like Desert Days is presenting a show, and, you know, just there's all kinds of great presenters involved. And so now you're curating a show that not only represents what Levitation is and is, you know, developing into, but also kind of what aesthetic fits this presenter's show. You know, who are the bands they want to bring? That's been interesting and definitely expands this, that kind of the scope and breadth of what we're doing programming wise.
I'm glad you brought that up because I meant to ask about that. I love me a good showcase, but also I was curious of, like, is that pretty much like they're probably mostly focused on their artists, right? They're not necessarily like joining to also take a cut, or when it comes to partnering with labels and stuff.
Well, like, yeah, I mean, it just depends. But yeah, generally, there's so little money to go around anyways, like the margins are so tight. And, you know, bringing labels in, it's more of a showcase and what we're able to offer versus like a traditional showcase like South By or CMJ or something, where the labels are, you know, basically expected to come in and put the expenses of bringing these bands down. We offer a format that's like, okay, well, let's come up with a ticket price. Let's build a bill and the bands are going to get paid. Again, it's building kind of a more sustainable format for that. Obviously not to knock South By, because like I mentioned earlier, if it wasn't for South By, we wouldn't have the ability to do things the way that we are in Austin. But so many artists get a lot out of South By, some of them don't, you know, and it's just tricky. With our South By showcase, I always feel really weird, you know, booking bands and I've got $0 to offer them.
Right.
But they want to do it, you know, it's they want a place to showcase their art, right? Again, it has to be sustainable. So we feel like this is a path forward for that, where the label doesn't have to foot the bill. It comes down to, is this worth money or not? You know, is seeing music worth money or not? Is listening to music worth money or not? And I think if we're going to be promoting it, like, you have to set the standard that, yes, like, this ticket is worth money, you know? We're not going to throw a free show. That's crazy.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Because somebody has to pay for it, and a lot of times the bands are paying for it. They don't have money for their van rental or rent at the end of the month. Some people would say that, I don't know, like, that's their choice, you know? But, and that's true, but we want to create an environment where bands can get paid. I mean, at least something, you know? And it's just,
totally.
If we're booking it, it's good and it's worth money. And like, there has to be some sort of exchange, and hopefully it's money, because can't buy groceries with cool points, you know? So,
yeah.
Or street cred. Doesn't work.
No. Unfortunately, well, yeah. However you want to look at it, no, it does not work. yeah. the few shows I've booked in my life, I definitely ended up, they were like benefit shows. It was more something I was doing more for fun than anything. I definitely came out of pocket to make sure like the artist got paid. I was like, wow, this is a thing that they deal with all the time.
Yeah, and it's, and you know, when those bands are playing a free South By show or whatever, and, you know, I mean, if you look at the challenges that South By Southwest deals with, there's no way that they could pay all those bands a nominal fee and not be completely upside down in a year. I mean, it's just, there's so many artists playing. So again, not to knock what they're doing. So it's like, you know, if an artist is playing a benefit for a charity, I mean, that's, you know, that expectation is set. I just feel like if you're playing a show, I don't know, we want people to pay the bands. to pay the bands. So it's all about finding a way for that to all add up and work.
Totally. And remind people that it's worth paying the money to for music that they enjoy so much. I would love.
Yeah, especially we've done, in like, the streaming age.
Yeah,
you know, where that huge piece of money is going away for so many bands, and touring is their bread and butter. As everybody knows, it used to kind of be like the opposite. You know, you would tour just to support the record. Now it's like you kind of release a record to support your tour. Because that's the only place, you know, on the financial side, especially a lot of mid-sized bands who have day jobs, and that's the majority of the artists that we work with.
So many bands have told me that the only place that they, or like the place they sell the most records, at least, is on tour. They're not like selling as many online or anything like that, mail order.
Totally. Well, I just got done prepping a bunch of stuff for dinner, and now I got to cook it. So it's great talking to you. You said that you're coming out for Levitation?
I'll be there.
Sweet. Okay, cool. Well, I hope I get a chance to meet you.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be rad.